Associate Professor Ben Wardham, Director of Open Door there at Flinders Uni in Adelaide. Welcome to the Last Post podcast, and thanks for joining us here.
G'day, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, wonderful. Ben, tell us a bit about what you're doing there with Open Door. It involves, obviously, a look at veteran transition, Ben, and in integration, wellbeing, et cetera, but there's a lot of avenues to achieving those goals. How are you going about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, look, we know that we've had plenty of really good, strong research in Australia around transition, but mainly from a mental health perspective or a medical or a psychiatric perspective. So we've got some great organisations like Phoenix and Gallipoli and a few others. What we're doing is taking a social health approach. So a holistic, a lived experience kind of approach. So I served myself. I'm a veteran, and I have my own transition experiences. I left the military, did my undergraduate degree, and after a bit of a struggle, found myself in the health department where I was writing men's health policy.
All right.
So I'm kind of taking that sort of model, but looking at social determinants and population health to look at veterans as a population group. And that means that we look at transition through a bunch of domains, and the United Nations and DVA and a few others have this wheel, and the domains are education, employment, housing, so for some it's finances, corrections, a few others.
Yeah, there's a big list, Ben, which covers just about everything, and hats off to you and Open Door for doing that. How was your own experience as a veteran? How is that enacted with you and your role here?
Yeah, well, I served 87 to 92. I was joined up as a young fellow that couldn't find work out in Civvy Street, and thought it'd be a good idea to join the military. Was excited by the movie Platoon at the time, where Charlie Sheen in the early scenes heads into the jungle for his first patrol, and it's nighttime and his weapons are arm's length out of reach, and the Viet Cong come through the jungle, and it's raining, and the moonlight is filtering through, and anyway, there's a bun fight, and I was excited by that, strangely enough, and I think a lot of my peers as young men are. And so we went to, I joined the military, joined the infantry, and then spent my 5 years, and came out, and transition wasn't very well prepared for that experience coming out. Had a bit of baggage, so I sort of rejected the institution for about a decade while I sort of went to uni and studied it. Came back 2004 to study the reform of the military justice system, and that opened up my connection with the veteran community, and here we are 15 years on, having done some really good groundbreaking research in the space, and trying to tell the digger's story, not try to appease the command and the politicians and the leaders. So the digger's story is very important to Open Door. Mm. And I mean that in terms of every member of the Defence Force, men, women, officers, other ranks.
Yes. So the digger's story is one that has been under increasing scrutiny as we mature in our outlook about what actually goes on in service and what can be difficulties that attract themselves to veterans when making the transition. A lot of it obviously is, we speak about unemployment, homelessness, mental health, all attached to each other. What has been your experience with the diggers and the veterans involved in the study, Ben? Have you been pleasantly surprised by a willingness to cooperate? Tell us about that, how that works.
Mm. Well, since 2004, I would have done about 120 long interviews with veterans across the rank structure, from privates and recruits to privates to cadets to senior NCOs and other ranks, all the way up to two-star generals. Yep, everyone's very happy to tell their story and contribute, and want everyone wants to see. Everyone's very proud of their service, and very, you know, even with bad experience, still very supportive of the institution. And to a T, everyone wants to see the best defence force that we can possibly have. So we don't take that lightly, and we're happy to stand up and say there's something wrong here. Let's have a look at it differently, without being overly negative, to offer solutions, not just talk about problems. Mm-hmm. The general transition experience of around those 120 people range from quite tragic transitions to some that are really successful and really prosperous. It is really quite variable. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that everything that the ADF does in transition doesn't work or isn't adequate. For some people, it is quite adequate and has comes out in very good and very strong outcomes. But there is a general pattern to say that one, diggers or Australian soldiers, Australian defence personnel give all to their service.
Mm-hmm.
But when leaving and coming back into the civilian world, it's one, they're not very good at articulating or having a language to describe what they've done.
Yep.
That means that it's often an interpretation by civilian agencies and organizations to understand what the strengths of military are, you know, what the return of investment is upon that massive amount of skills and stuff which every soldier builds up. So generating a language to communicate both for veterans and for civilian industry. So that's one of the most fundamental experiences of transitioning that I've come across out of those 120 interviews. And then, you know, there's each story is different in terms of some of the other ups and downs that defence members can experience.
Mm. Well, I mean, I was about to ask if there's a common thread in those 120 interviews, and you've answered that very well. A great coverage of different experiences, obviously, and you speak about how success comes to some veterans in some areas, and I know that particularly because the number of veterans that I speak to through the magazine, Ben, we have people like Mick Bainbridge, we have people like Glenn Colomites, or Colomites, as he likes to be called, and of course, I speak to many others that have been successful in civilian life. But I guess that doesn't take away from the fact that these elements that can lead to health issues would still exist with these people, exist in that transition.
Yeah. Well, I speak for myself. Like I said, had some great experiences, had some tragic experiences. Came out feeling probably unsupported and totally unable to articulate who I was and where I wanted to go. Spent some time on the sidelines. So many skills and strengths came out of the experience that bounced back, and we're in the mix. And those characters that you talked about there, they too probably have had, I know they have had their own experiences on the way, and look, they're very successful now. We still sort of talk about 20% of, from that mental health perspective anyway, the mental health policy approach, talk about 20% of veterans sort of needing intensive servicing and the other 80% as not, but I think that incorrectly suggests that the other 80% have a smooth run. Well, mm-hmm. I'm one of that 80%, still transitioning, still having the odd, you know, thing to deal with here and there. And but at the same time, the heart, the way, the resilience, the way to deal with hardship, the way to change your mindset and find a solution comes from that 5 years of military experience, and that's what allows us to get through. And actually, I see amongst my colleagues in the university and government and the veteran sector and the students that we're supporting to come through uni, that they have this capacity to step above the crap and make it happen. And that's just an overwhelmingly positive aspect of military experience, I think. Mm.
Yes, and look, with your experience, how good does it feel for you to be in a position now to assist? And of course, I suppose life is for learning, and you would be learning new things each day in your role, but how good does it make you feel to be able to come back from service, go through your own issues to a degree, and now be in a position to help and I guess cast a wider net, if we can say, through the wider community to understand the veteran experience?
Yeah, well, I think of it probably in one level as service after service. You know, I'm still such a formative experience that I still understand the kind of the raison d'etre of the military. And I think, you know, one of the things, follows track here, just bring me back on, but yeah. One of the things when you get out is a sense of, you know, there's quite a gap in our country between civilian and military. Yeah. We talk about the culture gap, the civil military culture gap. That's happened post-Vietnam, volunteer military, I'm army, bit army focused. It's increased over time. So military, but don't necessarily understand or the civilian world anymore. Civilians don't really understand what the military does. Whereas, you know, the great war efforts of World War I and II, we were more of a combined force.
You've done well there things have become a bit more fragile and difficult since the Vietnam War experience. And of course, then again, we get to what's recently happened or is happening in Afghanistan. And do you expect there will be more a need for help from veterans that have been to Afghanistan?
More help for? Do we need more services for?
Yeah, the veterans, will there be an increase in health issues, do you think, from veterans that have been to Afghanistan and now may feel as though that was for naught?
Yeah, well, I'm feeling a bit, you know, I didn't go to Afghanistan, but I'm feeling, even after all this time, a bit burnt by the things that are happening in the last couple of weeks. Mm. I felt disappointed by the war crimes allegations. Mm. But I felt disappointed in the leadership and the command around that, more than the troopers. I felt like it's command and politicians that put them in that position and facilitated that alleged going rogue. Mm-hmm. And I haven't felt that they've owned up to that or been transparent about that. So that's disappointing. And then today, knowing that. You know, I just would have thought if I was an infantry soldier engaged in that sort of thing and through multiple deployments, lost some of my mates, seeing the tragedy through the community, it had come out 20 years and in 2 or 3 weeks for it all be turned around, and then to have your prime minister come up and say, well, we fought for freedom, it's an insult, and it's raising sort of issues for me, which I'll be thinking about for a little while.
Yeah, well said. I think the community feels that way. When I started the magazine, Ben, I had an idea of wanting to get the general community and the veteran community closer together. We've succeeded in a lot of ways. There's still a lot of work to be done. And we look at never knowing who we're passing in the street. So we speak of the need for a decent accommodation for veterans, a surety in community engagement, and also, I guess, social health of the individual veteran then is reflected in social health and community health generally, because we are at this understanding, we are all intertwined with each other.
Yeah, but that's absolutely, and this is part of the transition, why we focus on transition, integration and wellbeing is, veterans can leave the military, but without a sense of community, a new sense of identity, purpose and belonging. We know that the common sort of experiences can be isolation, withdrawal, can lead to family violence, you know, being stuck in the home with the lot, with the shades down, sucking cans. I don't want to be stereotyped, but you know what I mean? This, we know that this is an aspect of that, and that's an aspect of being marginalized and socially disconnected. And so that's why it is so important for the families to be recognized behind veterans, but the broader community too. And we need to find ways to continually bring community and veterans together so that we have that broader sense. It's not, I think I was, I don't think I was going to say it before, but you came out of the military feeling like being in the military was a bad thing, you know, that you were, you're somehow, if not complicit, active in the war machine, and that's all about violence and hurting other people and territory. Well, most, I've done the survey of 1,000 university students or, you know, population groups. Why, you know, what do you think of the military, and would you join? And to the largest proportion of people say, yeah, I want to be involved in humanitarian work. I want to do it to build, to progress, to contribute to broader society. So that misunderstanding is a big part of the veterans transition experience, I think, again, in my interviews it comes through. Really it's about somehow government and community engaging in educational opportunities for us all to understand that we're you know, part of something bigger. The military is not just a war machine. It's actually intertwined in every part of everyone's lives in Australia.
And the peacekeeping efforts, et cetera, are well documented. Actually, I had an experience early on with the magazine, Ben, about, I rang up a business and I told them the magazine's name, and they go, is that, what sort of magazines? I said, veterans. And they said, nah, don't want anything to do with war, mate. You know, so how can people help to become involved in Open Door, Ben? And what are you looking for as for the study?
We engaged in a number of projects already, okay? So we've got like 63 members across Australia and New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And we're doing work for Department of Veterans Affairs. Mm-hmm. For other government agencies and independent research, which is very important. We desperately need independent research in this space. It's all right to do tenders, but they are constrained in some of the answers they can provide. So we're doing a study on veterans in incarceration. That's the first national study for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Right. We know nothing about veterans, incarcerated veterans in Australia.
Okay.
We don't know. We've still quite sort of fallible ways of identifying them in the system, in the criminal justice system. We are doing some work on the wellbeing measures, transition wellbeing measures for Department of Veterans Affairs, which is just about some of the frameworks around assessing and helping, supporting people on their way out. We've been engaged in complex care work for DVA around people with serious PTS and associated issues. So we're covering all those bases. Currently just being funded to look at male veteran suicide. But probably our biggest, and that's through the Freemasons and South Australian Men's Health and Wellbeing Research Centre. But probably they're all really important studies. Probably the big one we're focusing on at the moment is employment and education. So a bit about what I was talking about before. How do we help veterans know where they've been and who they are and what they've done, and translate that through explicit pathways through education to employment. So we're working with service providers and government stuff around that. We're a lived experience organisation, co-design. So we actively have veterans to our meetings and our strategic planning. Mm-hmm. We work explicitly with some EXOs, such as the Defence Force Welfare Association and the Australian Student Veterans Association. So very organic, very connected, very veteran-centric, very lived experience. So we're always happy to, and we're working on this, creating educational opportunities to bring the community in, which mm-hmm. aren't too academic, siloed. We have interested veterans on the books to involve in advising. And the work we want to do is to bring a holistic approach to the research issues which have been sort of identified, but pretty much only focused on through that psychological lens. So we're talking about life course, whole of life, holistic, veteran-centric, involving family and community.
And that's very important. The family, of course. I've been reading a bit about that too lately. And there can be a distancing there. Sometimes you spoke about education, and I guess education being so important to give. Part of that would be formal education, but also education that's offered through Open Door to give veterans a voice and to be perhaps less, well, to find justice for veterans in a lot of ways too. But how can people get involved in this? Do you need people to get involved, Ben?
We do have the website and, the usual social media outlets. So people are more than welcome to, we'll provide those details for you, obviously, but the people do contact us out of the blue and we do involve them. And, as much as our capacity holds, we will continue to do that. And like I said before, that's not just Australia, that's also New Zealand.
Wonderful. Well, we have a following in New Zealand too. And I thank you for taking the time to go through this with us here, Ben. And we'll have your details and Open Door details through the podcast and also in the magazine. We wish you all the continuing best and finding some ongoing solution. How long is Open Door going for? Is it an ongoing program?
We're a baby at the moment, or a research initiative. We've pulled in $1 million in 9 months, so we're on our way, and that'll then lead to being a centre and an Australasian institute, which.
Wow.
We're working internationally with the Five Eye Nations, with five or six other universities, and we're building a global presence. So we're going for gold, and we're going to create good outcomes for veterans, and we're going to remain loyal to the veteran voice and veteran experience.
Wonderful. Wonderful to hear, and a pleasure speaking with you and meeting you and being able to discuss some of the issues involved with Open Door and your role in that, Ben, your own experience playing an important part in what's developing to be an essential part of assistance for veterans and beyond, so, and the general community. So on that, we thank you so much, Ben, and wish you all the best. Stay in touch.
Thanks, Greg.